if we have a substantial uptick in forced sales from banks, that weakens the market even more. And banks don't want to do that because the banks are the ones who are going to take it, because people are just giving the keys back to the bank. They can walk away. Most of these loans are non-recourse.
Welcome to the Get Real Podcast, your high-octane boost of full-on reality therapy for personal, business, and investing success with your host, Ron Phillips, because somebody's got to tell it like it is.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Get Real Podcast. Ron Phillips, Heather Marchant here. Another episode.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about fun stuff today. I've had several people who wanted to know what to do with quite a considerable amount of money. So we're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about what's going on in the commercial world. So stay tuned for the whole show. We're going to have, we're going to have stats and all kinds of cool stuff. Like, what's going on with this supposedly distressed commercial market that's not yet distressed?
Yeah.
And man, it's been really hard to get deals. It's just been so hard to get deals, but supposedly they're coming. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But Heather, we talk to people all the time. Like, we have clients all the way from, like, I've got $100,000 up to I have 35 million. And like, what do I do?
Yeah.
And, you know, the crazy thing is that the questions are the same. The amount of money is different. And because the amount of money is different, the strategies are different.
True.
But the answer is the same for me, at least. And that is, yeah, you should be investing in real estate. Some portion of your portfolio should be investing in real estate.
Yeah.
And so let's talk a little bit about what that looks like. I've had three conversations over the last week with people who have millions of dollars to invest and just in real estate. So not that's a piece of their portfolio. And they want to know what to do. Where should we start? Should we be buying houses? Should I get a small apartment building? Should I get commercial property? Like, where are the deals? Like, what's going on? And then how do you manage them? Like, how do you do all of this stuff?
Are these people that own real estate already, Ron? Are they like wanting to get into real estate with that much?
They really don't. They have their money in, you know, stock market, bonds. You know, they're getting a pretty decent return.
Yeah.
But they know it's not going to last. And they've always wanted to do real estate. The real estate that they purchased themselves has done really well.
Yeah.
Some of them have had homes that they've bought while they're building other properties and, you know, just kind of kept held on to it, rented it out kind of a thing. And they've doubled in value. Plus, they got the rent and they know they got a little bit of depreciation, like all the things we talk about. And they're like, how do we do this on scale? Like, how do you do this with bigger numbers?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like you go back to when you're growing up and you're playing the game of Monopoly, which seems super simple and kind of stupid, but I've talked about on the show before that I'm really good at Monopoly. I haven't played for a long time because people won't play with me because I beat them. But anyway.
I'm kind of the same in my family, except I have a 7-year-old who's decent. He's pretty good at it.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So you buy houses and then you trade the houses in for hotels, which is like residential and commercial. And it's a combination of all of that that allows you to win the game. And so to not like overcomplicate that, that's really how this works. So if you're starting out and you don't have millions, you start with houses. If you start out and you have millions, you can still start out with houses if you want to. But deploying that much capital into houses, unless you're just going to pay cash for everything, is not a lot of fun. Let me just put it that way. Would you agree, Heather? I mean, it's just kind of,
yeah.
It's a pain to get the loans. And unless you're doing DSCR loans, which we've talked about on the show before, you can get debt service coverage ratio loans. The interest rates are a little bit higher, but man, they're easy. In comparison, substantially easier.
Yeah, that's true.
But then there's commercial properties. So if someone's trying to deploy $1 million, what do you say, Heather?
I mean, the most efficient thing to spend more money is just to buy a bigger property versus to buy 100 single family homes, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can get into some residential multifamily. I mean, we have some residential multifamily that's going to be well over $500,000, right? So having some things like that might work, but still you're kind of chipping away at it and having to do a lot of closings.
Yeah. So, I mean, the other thing too is there's strategies to this. Really depends on what a person is trying to accomplish.
Yes.
If it's capital preservation and they're more averse to leverage, duplexes and fourplexes, those can work for $1, $2, $3 million. $5, $6, $7, $8, $10 million. You really need to start looking at commercial property, especially if you're trying to leverage. It's just really difficult. Unless you're wanting to buy like subdivisions.
Yeah.
Like smaller subdivisions of these fourplexes, duplexes, townhomes kind of thing. You could do that. But then you get into commercial and all the different types of properties, which kind of leads me to an article that I read this week. I think we've talked on the show about the office commercial space specifically.
We have.
I have said repeatedly that I think it's going to be on sale.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't yet. crazy enough. And there was a really good article in the Wall Street Journal that explains a little bit about what's going on with the office space. And I've had some office space. I currently have some office space and it's done really, really well, but it isn't for everybody. So let's talk a little bit about office and how this works. Okay. I would have thought by now we would start to see some forced sales from the banks. And really, we're not. I mean, it's in the really low single digits, like between 2 and 3% of office deals in the US that have a distressed seller, which is shocking to me because
yes,
these loans, as we've discussed, they have to reprice and these loans are coming due. So what's happening? And if you recall, Heather, we talked about this all hinges on the banks.
Yeah.
What are the banks actually going to do here?
Because it could be a lot on their books that the interest rates started low. The interest rate's much higher now.
Uh-huh.
And they know they need to raise the rate. I mean, according to the loan terms, they're raising the rate significantly on usually a pretty decent sized loan. So, I mean, one thing this article really starts out with is talking about how lenders are being forgiving.
Yep.
To a lot of these loans, right?
And for good reason, right? Because the first thing it says why this is not happening is because the strong economy, mm-hmm. the strong economy is making it so that that there's not a ton of pressure.
He said cough.
Yeah,
cough. He said cough instead of coughing.
So at lease expiration, people are downsizing. People are like, they're not renewing leases. But the lenders, they're like, man, if we can just kick this can down the road a little ways, then these guys don't have to fire sale this stuff into a weakened office space market.
Yeah.
Which it doesn't feel like it is, but if you have a bunch of distressed sellers hit the market, all of a sudden, I believe that it turns the mentality and the feel of the market to, oh my gosh, okay, if we have a substantial uptick in forced sales from banks, well, that weakens the market even more. And banks don't want to do that because the banks are the ones who are going to take it. Because people are just giving the keys back to the bank. Like they can walk away. Most of these loans are non-recourse. I also said that the regulators, it depends on what the regulators do to the banks. So if the regulators come in hard and heavy, banks don't really have a whole lot of choice. But right now, that's not happening. And the banks also are playing nice. So anyway.
Which makes sense because if they're going to have to sell all these properties for a loss, I mean, that could hurt the banks. So it makes sense that they're going to try to work with these borrowers, I guess.
Yeah. So, I mean, we had, article says there was almost $36 billion in office loans that came due last year, but that number is going to go up to almost $80 billion. And I don't know how they keep chasing this, but man, and this article suggests as well that it's still coming. There's going to be too much pressure that's going to hit. And it's going to have to happen. So I would still look for that this year, which means if you're someone who's trying to deploy millions of dollars, I like stuff that's on fire sale.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'd be good with that.
Yeah. So see, it says, yeah, $72.7 billion.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Between now and the end of 2025. So that's a lot of money that these people have to backstop. So,
well, one thing I thought was interesting in the article is in this Wall Street Journal article is it's talking about like what resolution they've come to these banks. And one of them is they're just extending, which is what I assumed, right? They just extend the loans. But it said some are being sent to a special servicer, which is a third party that tries to come up with a good outcome. So probably a loan modification to figure out how to make this work. Maybe a longer like amortization or I don't know. I thought that was interesting that they're being creative and not just extending the loan. So,
yeah. And the other thing is that there's a whole bunch of money that has come in and said, hey, we're willing to provide this additional debt, which is kind of saving the banks a little bit.
Mm.
So there's a ton of money that's buying notes, buying debt from these companies. If they default, then those people get the buildings. So it's a pretty good play.
Yeah.
It does say in here, though, offices will be the buying opportunity of our generation, provided investors pick the right locations, right? Ultra wealthy families and local property developers are among the earliest investors gearing up to buy cheap buildings. I really like this space. And I mean, it should start to happen this year. It should start to happen this year. Let's hope it does. And that there's some opportunities out there.
Yeah.
So if you're getting ready to invest that kind of money, I think you should be looking at office space. The type of office space is really important when you're doing your diligence. The type of tenant that would like that office space. There's opportunities out there where there's different types of office that works. I talked about one of them that I have. It's in what is a traditional office location, but it is zoned dual use. So you can do a little bit of light industrial in there and you can do regular office. And also in properties in other Midwest cities, we've seen upticks in tenants who are out searching for office space right now, which I really didn't foresee. But in both of those particular areas, there's other things that are coming to the area that is sparking the growth. So you can still buy cheap assets if you buy them in the right location where there's some commercial type growth happening and you can sit on these for a little while and bear the vacancy. I think there's massive upside in them.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think we should briefly talk about the difference, because I think people might listen to this that haven't bought commercial and say, wow, deals are coming. So what can I do to be ready for those deals? What if over the next 3 years, what can an investor do to put themselves in a position to be an option? Those are an option for them to buy, right? So a couple of things, and then Ron, maybe fill in the gaps that I'm missing here, but having some experience owning multifamily out of state on all the commercial properties that I've been involved in the purchase, the lender wants to see that you already are in the game. But owning even like duplexes or things like that out of state has been really helpful in being able to qualify, having obviously the liquidity so that you can purchase. Because I mean, maybe if they're on fire sale, there could be some creative financing, but not necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, generally creative financing comes from people who own them outright. And those people aren't going to be super happy to do any kind of fire sale. So the ones who are going to be on sale are most likely going to be in jeopardy with the bank. In the past, I have gotten really good financing from banks, but that was when banks were super solvent, and banks right now are having a hard time. I don't think there's going to be that. I think cash is going to be king. So if you have $5, $10 million and you're wanting to invest it in real estate, I think one of the plays that you can do is you can trade some of that bond money where you're getting, you know, there's multiple different accounts. You can get 4, 5, 5.5%. So if you can buy an asset that has upside potential and is producing 5 to 6% cap rate, which is basically your dividend net, I think that's a pretty good trade because you're still getting your dividend that you wanted, the income that you wanted, but you have massive amounts of growth opportunity, especially over a lease term. So if you can get a 5 to 6% or higher than that cap rate on first year and you have locked in 5, 10, 15 years worth of rent growth, I mean, that's a really, really fun play. Plus, it's easy. Those commercial properties are much, much easier than an apartment building, for instance, where you have considerable amount of tenant turn. It's very management intense, where these are really not. You have longer vacancies because you're looking for specific types of tenants. But when they get locked in for 5 and 10, 15, 20 years on a lease. And so they're boring. They sit there and don't do a whole lot, but go up in value. So buying them when they're on sale, I think, is a really big deal. Now, if you're looking to refinance, you can still do that. Like, you can pay cash, get great deals on these properties, and then you can refinance them after the fact.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be scared of that. And anybody who has the ability to pay cash, I think you can lead with that, right? Faster closings to help these people out of their situations.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think the other thing I've seen is that banks typically like investors local to the property. I mean, not every time, but a lot of times. So being, if you want to network in your area, but I know my area, I don't think it's going to cash flow.
Going to be a little trickier.
Yeah, a little trickier. So just keep that in mind that some states that we've worked in, out-of-state investors, I mean, you can find the lender that will do it, but man, it's an uphill climb compared to, oh, you live here in our city? Great. It's perfect.
Yeah. I mean, you can solve for that problem for sure. It is always easier, but you can solve for that problem. So if you live in a market where it doesn't work, where things are still climbing in value, both residentially and commercially, you can always buy there locally, but why wouldn't you go buy somewhere where you can get a better return?
Yeah.
A lower cost asset that has a much higher likelihood of an increase in value. And at the same time, while you're waiting, a higher dividend or higher cash flow payment. And then let's not even talk about, because we've done, I don't know how many shows on cost segregation and depreciation. We'll do another one just as soon as it passes both houses, the Senate and the House. Hasn't done that yet, but when that happens, we'll bring it to you because I think it will. And when that happens, it's a really big deal.
Oh, yes. That'd be amazing.
Especially for people who are wealthy and have passive income of other sources, because even if you're not a real estate professional, passive losses go against passive income. So if you have been wise and you have created passive income of other forms that you're living off of, you can write off the taxes that you would have to pay on that passive income. And if you're a real estate professional, it can cross into ordinary income, other income streams, right? So it's a really, really big deal. And I find that most of the people who have this amount of money to invest have investments that are producing passive income in other means that they have to pay taxes on. So
that's true. One other thing that I thought was interesting in this article, toward the end, it said a flood of for sale signs looks inevitable. They're just taking longer than expected to arrive. I'll have to link in the show notes when we talked about this, because it was several months ago talking about how this was going to happen. But also adding to the remote work and everything that's happening in office space, like you said, Ron, I mean, having an office space that can work for light industrial or other opportunities could be really helpful too.
Yeah. And you know, I am kind of on the believer side of people are going to want to go back to offices eventually. Not everybody, but enough that offices aren't going to be obsolete. I think that there are areas of cities where it's going to be tougher. And that's why in the article they were talking about location. The locations are going to be really, really important. But I do think, I mean, it's already proven out. People are going back to the office. I mean, our team, we talk about this all the time. Not that I want to go back to an office. I don't. But we talk about it. It is very difficult to have cohesion as a unit when you're not in an office.
Yeah.
And not everybody's in the same space. So I do believe that there's going to be, just like there was an exodus, I do believe that there is going to be a migration back to offices. And if in the next year, maybe year and a half, we have the opportunity to buy office buildings at a reduced price just because of the financing terms, I think long term, this is a really good play.
That's a good point. I know we've been interviewing and talking to potential candidates, and that's come up because we are remote, our positions are remote. And one person asked, so do you have plans to change that? And I think it caught both of us off guard, Ron. We were like, well, huh? Like,
no, we really like this. So no.
I know.
But there's a lot of people who don't, people who want to work in an office setting. And I think from a senior management in corporate life, there's something to be said for having people in the same place.
Yeah.
So I think we'll see more of that. A lot of companies are already doing it. Many of my friends who thought it was kind of cool no longer think it's so cool, and they're transitioning back. So we did it before COVID. So we did it on purpose before it was cool. I guess it really wasn't cool during COVID, was it? Nah, they shut the country down. It really wasn't cool.
But I think it became more normal. So it's less stressful to have my kids run in the room or whatever. If I'm on a call, it's way less stressful than it used to be, for sure.
So I think to kind of finish things off, if you have a substantial amount of money that you want to invest in real estate, the very first thing is to come up with some kind of a plan for that money and to determine what is most important. Is it capital preservation? Is it growth? Is it income? Is it some combination of those? And if it's a combination of those, kind of what percentage of each of those, like weight those, because each one of those would potentially be a different location, a different property type, or a combination of different locations and different property types, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so before you have somebody help you, we'd be happy to help you, but before you have anybody help you do this, really you should sit down and figure out, okay, what am I trying to accomplish with this? Other than getting into real estate, which is a great thing, what is it that is my outcome that I want? Do I need X amount of income from this? Is this just a growth play over time? And is that, do I need that growth to be safe in a kind of a capital preservation type of a mode? Do I need no income from this money? Like what is it we're trying to accomplish? All of that really, really important before we look at types and look at areas and all of that. And
very true.
On that happy note, I think if you're sitting in this, you definitely should get out and make something happen. If you're not, and you have less funds than that, well, everything just gets easier and you should definitely be doing something too. So everybody get out there until next week, make something happen.
This has been the Get Real Podcast. To subscribe and for more information, including a list of all episodes, go to getrealestatesuccess.com.